Ukrainian polls, 21 years of KIIS data, narrative and ideology versus their opinion, the right podcast. Hello, this video is going to present, analyze, and put front and center opinion polls conducted by a sociological institute located in Ukraine that go all the way back to 2001 to analyze opinions held by Ukrainian people. The goal is to put the voices of Ukrainian people front and center and compare them to what we're seeing in media. And that media is a spectrum from traditional media to right-wing media to anti-imperialist media. As I make this video, Russia is mobilizing further military escalation for Ukraine, and there will apparently be a referendum held for an annexation of territories in the Donbas region of Ukraine to the Russian Federation. In these stories, you will see perhaps the president of Ukraine, but mostly Vladimir Putin, Joe Biden, NATO, the EU, everybody except actual Ukrainians. So again, the point of this project and this analysis is to put those voices front and center, as it is Ukrainians who should be driving that discussion, who should have self-determination. A word about self-determination regarding this referendum. What you will see in this video will contradict, I think, what we all know to be the conclusion, the results of this referendum. The referendum is going to say, of course, that 90 plus percent who voted want to join the Russian Federation. However, what we'll see from the sociological data, again, spanning back to 2001, really in this video picking up at 2008, though, that foregone conclusion does not match information and data from previous polls. Throughout the video, I'm going to be referencing other videos that I've made. So if you haven't already, check out the Right Podcast channel. I just want to call out a few videos. One, Russian extremists in Donbass. Two, the Nazbols, why left accounts are posting right-wing content. Three, Oliver Stone's Ukraine on Fire critique. And four, Left-Right Alliance. All of those videos are going to add different types of context to these sociological polls and data that we'll be analyzing. Many of these other videos are somewhat of the opposite of data analysis. They're very theoretical, and they can get into the ideological weeds of both politics, philosophy, and other topics. Here is the KIIS website. We can see that it's in Ukrainian. I don't speak Ukrainian. However, I did use the translation function on my web browser to translate to English. So the Kiev International Institute of Sociology, there were some hiccups. There were some polls, for instance, that were scanned, which were in Ukrainian that did not translate. There were also some translation issues involving grammar and sentence structure. But for the most part, for the vast majority, the translation worked very well. And this is where I got the vast majority of my information for this video. Why use KIIS information? Because originally I was looking at research papers from the 2014 era to attempt and glean information about what's been happening in Ukraine, specifically revolving the Maidan protests, but Eastern Ukraine and the Donbas region as well. In looking at these various research papers that I had access to, some that I paid to have access to, all of them shared one thing in common, and that commonality was the use of KIIS data to obtain insight to form conclusions. So instead of citing work that others had done, and I did read it and it did inform me, I instead went directly to the KIIS website and conducted a meta-analysis myself, which is what we will be seeing here. As mentioned earlier in the introduction, there is a narrative, and the narrative goes something like this. The protests on the Maidan in the winter of 2013-14 were organized by Americans and radical nationalists, or sometimes just outright Nazis. As a result, the nationalists seized power and threatened Russian-speaking populations within Ukraine. Many of those lived in the east, or Donbass. Crimea was in danger but voluntarily joined Russia and was saved from repression by far-right neo-Nazi nationalists. Donbass rebelled and is now fighting for independence, specifically Donetsk and Luhansk. The conflict in Ukraine is a civil war of criminal power by right-wing Banderaite nationalists against the average citizen. Now, I added some things in, but if you're watching this and you see that slide, it's pretty close. However, what I did not read on the top in blue was the logical chain of Russian propaganda. Now, this is not something that I put together. This is something that the Kiev Institute of Sociology put together when researching Russian propaganda and its effects on the Ukrainian population. So I'm deferring to Ukrainian specialists on this. This is how they frame the narrative. Some surprising findings that I found looking through this information. While violence during Maidan protests did prompt people to join, there was a very large contingent who wanted regime change, Yanukovych to fulfill his campaign promises regarding the association agreements, and a desire to change life in Ukraine. This is important because a thrust of misinformation, and something that was highlighted in the Oliver Stone movie Ukraine on Fire, was this idea that in general, most of the people at Maidan were peaceful and that they did not want regime change. And the polling does not represent that. Regarding demands of Maidan, two of the top three supported by those polled involved regime change. Ethnic Russians come in second, only behind ethnic Ukrainians who speak Ukrainian in terms of most tolerated or accepted communities in the country. This is very important because propaganda that we'll see, propaganda that has come directly from the Russian government, from Vladimir Putin himself, but also through these alt-imperialist channels, suggests that ethnic Russians were being persecuted, faced prejudice, and were seeking relief or help from the Russian government. This is not represented in any of the poll numbers that we will see. Other surprise findings. At no point prior to occupation did most Ukrainians in the Donbas region want independence in order to become an independent state, a standalone state, or to join the Russian Federation. We'll see that there was more support to join Russia. However, it was still a minority. Even less wanted Russian intervention and troops on the ground. A strong majority polled this year consider themselves citizens of Ukraine, including ethnic Russian Ukrainians living in the East. The Ukrainian military is seen in a positive light, according to Eastern Ukrainians. This is important because in these alt-imperialist channels, MAGA communism, whatever you want to call it now, the Ukrainian military is discussed through the lens of the Azov Battalion and NATO. That is not how people in Eastern Ukraine view it. Support for NATO and EU ascension has risen sharply since the Russian invasion. What we'll see is that over the years, 2008, 2010, 2014, 2022, the further that Russia has escalated militarily, the more support within Ukraine there has been to join NATO and EU. And this also includes Eastern Ukraine and Donbas. A clear majority of Ukrainians, including Eastern Ukraine and ethnic Russians, do not see territorial concessions as a long-term solution for ending the Russian war. And these numbers we'll get to at the very end of the video are overwhelming. And so if you see or hear outlets, media personalities, Twitter, organizations in your area claiming that there's escalation by Biden and NATO against potentially nuclear power in order to weaken it for its own global positioning, you can have that conversation. However, the people who are actually involved, the most important people, the Ukrainian people, don't see it that way. And the Ukrainian people do not see territorial concessions as having anything to do with a long-term solution to Russian aggression. From here on out, we're going to be looking at a lot of screen grabs from many different polls conducted, again, from 2001 to 2022. Most of the data begins in 2008, but really 2013, 2014. And that's obvious. That's when Biden began. But there were some earlier polls that had some interesting information just for your general knowledge. These polls were general sociological polls asking about things like income level, about stress, happiness, brands that people use, such as cigarette brands, for instance, as well as political and election-based questions. But in 2008, there was this poll, and the question was this. If a referendum on the status of an autonomous Republic of Crimea was held in the near future, how would you vote? And this is interesting because if you look to the east, 58% said Crimea should have the status of autonomy within Ukraine. 6% said Crimea must have a status of a Russian autonomy. Only 6. And 5% said Crimea must be separated from Ukraine and transferred to Russia. Now, these numbers are even higher in the West, of course. But this is insight. 2008, historically speaking, that would be the year of the Russian-Georgian War, for instance. But people in the Donbass region in the East, this early, did not necessarily see separation. Now, this is in regards to Crimea, as something that would be productive. On May 14, 2008, the question is, should Russia confirm a status of Russian city within Crimea, essentially? How do you assess this statement? Positively in the East is 13%, negatively is 35%. More positively than negatively is 5%. Quicker negatively is 12%. So overwhelming in the East, in Donbass, people did not view the notion of a Crimean city essentially being confirmed as a status of a Russian city in a positive light. And this is important because there is a large Russian naval base there. And this is essentially how Russia gained access to Crimea during their annexation. Other things that could give you insight into what Ukrainians were thinking and feeling back in 2008. So concerns. What do you think people are most afraid of? Rising prices and utility tariffs were number one, followed by non-payments of salaries and pensions. Ethnic conflicts. So that would also include supposed issues with ethnic Russians within Ukraine, only polled at 8.1% as a concern. Military attack, only 5.4%. Terrorist attacks, only 2.6%. If you look at the top, what Ukrainians were worried about back in 2008 are things that people around the world are mostly worried about. Perceptions of Russia in 2008. The interesting thing here is that Ukrainians had a much more positive view of Russia than Russians of Ukrainians. And we'll see this divide just continue. However, in 2008, attitude in Ukraine to Russia, very good, was 47.3%. However, attitude in Russia to Ukraine was only very good at 5.5%. Overall good was closer, attitude in Ukraine to Russia, 40.7. So a very favorable view of Russia in Ukraine. Attitude in Russia to Ukraine, overall good, 49.2. So that's positive. However, here's the gap. Generally bad. Attitude in Ukraine to Russia, only 4.5%. However, attitude in Russia to Ukraine, 27.3%. Generally bad. In these early polls, Ukraine had an overall very good view of Russia and that Russia was more suspect of Ukraine. Going back further to 2006, in your opinion, which alliance of the states would be better to live the population of Ukraine, the European Union, or an alliance with Russia and Belarus? We can see that there's some translation here. However, it's asking this because around this era was the Orange Revolution, and this is when notions of joining the European Union began and an association agreement began to be discussed. So this is overall Ukraine. This is not just Donbass. Of course, join the European Union, only 15.9%. Rather in the European Union, so slightly less, 14.9%. Rather an alliance with Russia and Belarus, and this could come in the forms of the customs union, 23.7%. And the highest of them all, of course, an alliance with Russia and Belarus at 32.3%. So at this time, closer alliance with Russia and Belarus was the clear majority. That is going to change drastically. One of the key issues or pieces of propaganda used to justify the Russian invasion and occupation of Eastern Ukraine is the idea that Russia is saving ethnic Russians within Ukraine, that they are being persecuted. Here we have a tweet. It's actually a retweet from Max Blumenthal stating that the U.S. is arming neo-Nazis in Ukraine. Of course, that's the Azov Battalion, but they also like to talk about right sector as well. America is arming the very dangerous Azov Battalion. They were used by USA in 2014 to overthrow the elected government of Ukraine. Ethnic Russians have been attacked for 8 years. The U.S. is arming neo-Nazis in Ukraine. So this is what's being presented. And it's being presented in the way as attempting to look anti-fascist, as attempting to look anti-war. More about ethnic Russians. They've already taken steps to NATO membership. Danger includes weapons of mass destruction, U.S. troops, and if a conflict breaks out, Russia being forced to choose between abandoning millions of ethnic Russians or entering a world war. Current CIA chief Burns laid it out best to WikiLeaks, of course. But again, being presented that the West and the U.S. in the form of NATO are the aggressors, as the Kiev Sociological Group had pointed out earlier in their Russian misinformation guidelines, the idea that extreme nationalists took over after Maidan and were threatening ethnic Russians is present here as well. This is a tolerance poll conducted in 2010. So I have highlighted here amongst the larger text, a survey conducted by KIIS in February 2010 showed that up to three ethnic groups had the highest level of tolerance among the population of Ukraine. Number one, who enjoys the highest level of tolerance, are Ukrainians who speak Ukrainian. 96% of the population do not mind them living in Ukraine. I mean, that's what we would suspect, of course. But the second most accepted group are Russian-speaking Ukrainians at 94% and Russians at 85%. So among the top three most tolerated populations within Ukraine, including Ukrainians who speak Ukrainian, are Russian-speaking Ukrainians and Russians. And then it goes further down the list. Jewish people at 63%. Americans only at 35%. So as a matter of fact, ethnic Russians have a far higher acceptance rate if we're talking about tolerance, prejudice, bigotry in Ukraine than Americans do. Here's another favorability poll from 2010. How do you feel about Russia, Ukraine in general now? So this is a few years later than what we looked at earlier. In Ukraine, in April 2008, it starts out at 88%, very good or mostly good. By October 10th, 93%, very good or mostly good. In Russia, it's a little bit different. Very good or mostly good beginning in March of 2008 is only 55%. Very good or mostly good on October 10th is only 67%. However, it's still the majority, but nowhere near close to the 93% favorability found in Ukraine towards Russia. So it would seem that Ukrainians who speak Russian and ethnic Russians who also speak Russian are, if you take out Ukrainians who speak Ukrainian, actually in the top 2% of most tolerated minority populations in the country. Doesn't really match the rhetoric. But there is rhetoric, and Glenn Greenwald is another source of this rhetoric. After YouTube notified the producers of Oliver Stone's Ukraine film that it was removing it from their channel, Rumble Video, a great place to see right-wing reactionary content, uploaded the film. In less than a day, it has been viewed more than 150,000 times. Watch A Critical Eye, but highly recommended, Ukraine on Fire. And what we'll see regarding this rhetoric is that it's geared greatly towards Maidan and attempting to show any type of Ukrainian nationalism as being tied to fascism. Thinking towards that Oliver Stone film and a lot of propaganda by alt-imperialists and other pro-Russian sources is the notion that the majority of people at Maidan did not want a coup or a regime change or for Yanukovych to stand down. Instead, they were mostly peaceful, and Yanukovych said as much in Oliver Stone's film. Again, if you want to know more about that, hop over to the channel and watch my critique on the film. It's not just a critique on the movie. It breaks down all the propaganda behind the movie. However, when we look at the numbers here, and this is from December 2013 of people who are actually at the Maidan protests, what demands which were declared at the Maidan do you support? 81.8% release of arrested participants of Maidan, followed only by 80.1% resignation of the government. 75.1% resignation of Viktor Yanukovych and conduction of a preterm presidential election. So the numbers show that it was not just an extreme group such as Right Sector, Svoboda, Azov, whatever you want to talk about, whatever Nazi-affiliated Banderite group you want to say, that was working in collaboration with the United States and NATO to conduct a color revolution in Ukraine. The numbers don't show that. The numbers show that 75.1% of the people at Maidan in December of 2013 wanted Yanukovych to step down and have preterm presidential elections. 80.1% wanted a resignation of the government. Part of this propaganda involves Yanukovych being the legitimate president, and Putin has since declared that he should return to power and that he is a legitimate president of Ukraine. Well, let's look at a poll. 2014, do you consider Viktor Yanukovych to be a legitimate president of Ukraine? In the Donetsk region, certainly no, 34.4%. Rather no, 23.8%. A clear majority in Donetsk did not see Viktor Yanukovych as a legitimate president. How about Luhansk? Certainly no, higher, 40%. Rather no, 17.6%. Now, true, in other regions, it's even more. 64.6% for certainly no, 64%. However, these are the two regions that have been embroiled in most of the combats. These are the regions in which separatists have declared independent states, and these are the regions that Russian military have been most invested in. And in 2014, a majority of people in both Donetsk and Luhansk didn't see Yanukovych as the legitimate president. This leads us to the issue of separatism in Donbas. Here we have a tweet from Jackson Hinkle, and again, this is a good representation of what alt-imperialist folks posing as left might be pumping out. The tweet reads, "If this was really about protecting the people of Donetsk and Luhansk, why has Ukraine, again, armed neo-Nazi Azov battalion in their murderous campaign on Donbas civilians, cut off civilians from vital resources, and denied self-determination of Donbas civilians?" So framing this in a way that presents the people of Eastern Ukraine as wanting self-determination, and wanting self-determination because they have been hurt and put in harm's way by armed nationalists post-Maidan. Here we have a table with the following questions from the year of 2014. Which one from the following variants of your region status would you choose if there was the possibility? And I have Donbas highlighted. So the selections or the options are maintaining the current status in the unitary government with current authority, maintaining the current status in the unitary Ukraine with extended authority, autonomy within a federal Ukraine, separation from Ukraine, and an independent state established, separation from Ukraine and joining another state. Difficult to answer, don't know, have not yet decided as the last. So the two highest options were in Donbas at 25.7%, maintaining the current status in the unitary Ukraine with extended authority. Below that, autonomy within a federal Ukraine, 23.5% approval, and 9.3% wanting to maintain the current status in the unitary government. Only 8.4% wanted separation from Ukraine and independent states. So there will be a referendum happening. If you're watching this, it's probably already happened. And there have been previous iterations of this, as well as in Crimea. You have to ask yourself, why is it in 2014, when the Sociological Institute interviewed people and they gave them all these options, that a clear majority wanted to remain in Ukraine in some form, the same form, but mostly in a form that extends them some authority, or perhaps a federal version of Ukraine? Well, only 8.4% wanted independence, and 22.5% wanted to join another state. How did that happen? But then when we had the referendum, there was an overwhelming nearly 100% vote to separate. And the referendum to join Russia has not happened yet in Donetsk and Luhansk, but let me predict that the numbers are going to show something very similar. Overwhelming support to join. So what's the difference between that and this? Well, you know, we'll let you come to that conclusion. However, the numbers don't line up. Further, this new referendum, which has probably occurred by the time you watch this video, is not just about independence, it's about joining Russia. So this is from 2014 as well. Do you support the idea that your region should secede from Ukraine and join Russia? In the Donetsk region, 11.9% said yes, 15.6% said rather yes, 34.9% said certainly no, 17.3% said rather no, with similar numbers in Luhansk. Again, you have to ask yourself, what's changed? And so you might ask yourself, well, what about ethnicity? So let's look at ethnicity as opposed to geographic region. Ukrainians, Russians, I think that this is what we want to look at. 8% thought that there should be separation from Ukraine and an independent state created, which does not jive with the previous referendums to become independent in Donetsk and Luhansk, and this would be the population that would most likely be portrayed as most favorable towards that. And separation from Ukraine and joining another state, still only 24.6%. And that's essentially what this referendum will be. And that's really the target minority population within Ukraine, which we saw was the third most accepted and tolerated, including ethnic Ukrainians who speak Ukrainian. So there's just, the numbers aren't adding up. This is all from KIIS as well. It's just from a PDF as opposed to their website. So the graphics look different. The status of the Donbas regions of Ukraine, in your opinion, what status Donetsk and Luhansk regions should have? 14.6% say regions as part of Ukraine with the same rights that they have now. 22% regions as part of Ukraine, but with enhanced rights in economic, social, and humanitarian spheres. And 27.6% autonomous republics as part of Ukraine. In the bottom section, those that want to be independent from Ukraine, 4.9%. Autonomous republics as part of Russia, 1.6%. Regions as part of Russia, 1.6%. And in general, looking at the East, 25% would want things to stay the same. 40% would want regions as part of Ukraine, but with enhanced rights. 16.8% autonomous republics of Ukraine, and then single digits for the rest involving independence or joining Russia. The status of Donbas, Ukraine. In your opinion, what status Donetsk and Luhansk regions should have? 37.7% regions as part of Ukraine with the same rights. 37.9% regions as part of Ukraine, but with enhanced rights. Autonomous republics as part of Ukraine, 10.7%. Independent states, 3.1%. Autonomous republics part of Russia, 0.6%. Focusing only on regions of the DNR and LNR, which were the breakaway republics or breakaway regions, the numbers show similar results. In the DNR and LNR, half of the respondents consider optimal for Donbas one of three scenarios in which Donbas remains with the country or within Ukraine. And those would be autonomy within Ukraine, decentralization within Ukraine, or Donbas as part of Ukraine with the same rights as before. So 50% essentially would want one of those three things to stay with Ukraine. 26% would want independence, and 16% would want Donbas as part of the Russian Federation. So this is not even the whole of Donbas or these regions. These are the specific areas in which people could be contacted in order to poll. And only 26% wanted independence, less wanted to join Russia. About half wanted to remain in Ukraine in one form or another. And this is the stronghold of this supposed revolution. Now, this graphic is important because I believe that it gives voice to the people of Donbas. Instead of making an argument that this is all nothing and that everybody in Donbas just wants to go back to the way things were, that's not accurate. Even though the vast majority of people in Donbas did want to stay with Ukraine, they did want things to change. And they did want things to change after Maidan specifically. So if we look at the bottom of this slide, we have Donbas with only 13% wanting unitary regions. And that's essentially to maintain the style of government that had existed previous. In the West, 48%. A unitary decentralization. Now, this is more popular in Donbas with 28%. You know, interesting, though, this is popular across the board. But the 20%, I think, is where the separation occurs. Federalization comes in at 20%. And there's a much larger area of I don't know involved with Donbas. But if we look at these options, 28 and 20% what this is saying to us is that if we look at the other polls, yes, the clear majority of people in this region did want to stay within Ukraine. However, they wanted the power structure dynamic to change. And that had been something that had been discussed earlier. It's something that Yanukovych talked about in his campaign as well. What this does not mean is that people in Ukraine wanted to become an independent state or join Russia. The numbers show that that is not what most people in Donbass wanted. Now, to give voice again to the people of Donbass, there might be criticism that could be levied against the Petro Poroshenko regime. Perhaps they missed the boat on this or they got caught. However, I find it difficult to criticize that regime too much, given the fact that essentially, while all this was happening, while Maidan and Revolution of Dignity was occurring, Russia had already started engaging in propaganda, in boots on the ground, and then the annexation with Igor Gherkin leading this in Crimea, and eventually joining up in the Donbas region to give support to the separatists. So in looking at this, we could say that it was really in the invasion of Crimea by Russia that halted any potential conversation that could have been had between Donbas and the rest of Ukraine regarding unitary decentralization or federalization. That Russian involvement essentially created a state of war. And the Petro Poroshenko regime then viewed participants in this as terrorists. And unfortunately, that's why this discussion was never had. And unfortunately, that's why people in Donbass, even with this referendum, whatever you want to call it, are most likely still not having their voices heard. Another popular trope by alt-imperialists is that Russia was asked to come in to Donbass, specifically by ethnic Russians to help them. And here's a tweet that's a good example of this. US went to Iraq and Afghanistan, killing a million people, raping the country, stealing their oil and wealth, and called it liberation. While Russia is invited into Donbass on peacekeeping mission to avert genocide and greeted with champagne and fireworks, and the US calls it an invasion. Again, if you're on the left, if you're anti-war, if you're a socialist, communist, something like that, you might read this and nod your head and say, yes, this makes a lot of sense in the hypocrisy of the imperialistic West. Well, but let's see what the numbers of actual people living in Ukraine, let's see what they think about having Russians in Donbass. And again, you might be saying, well, those are those Banderaites in the West. That's right sector and Svoboda and George Soros, etc. Well, this breaks it down by region. 2014, do you support the introduction of Russian troops into Ukraine? The Donetsk region, 18.8% said rather no. A hefty 47.5% said certainly no. Only 9.9% said certainly yes, and a 9.4% rather yes. Similar numbers in Luhansk. 17.4% rather no, 36% certainly no, only 6.9% certainly yes. So it's clear that the majority of people in these regions did not want Russian troops in Ukraine, that the narrative being presented of the United States being everything that it is, an imperial force and exploiter of global economies and peoples, being hypocritical because Russia is being asked voluntarily to come in and being greeted with champagne and fireworks, that's the part, that's the propaganda. That's not true. And of course, these numbers are higher in other regions, but in the two breakaway regions, the clear majority did not want Russian troops there. So more on this topic from 2015, Federation Council of Russia allowed the president of Russia, Vladimir Putin, to bring troops onto the territory of Ukraine. What do you think about this decision? So 2015, this is when the Russian government gave the clearance for Russia to send actual troops, not just their extremists and unmarked people in. So overall, Ukraine, 77.1% completely condemned the act. Only 4.8% completely approved of it, 3.8% rather approved of it. Okay, I mean, that's all of Ukraine. What about the regions? Completely condemned. In the East, a majority, 54.5%, completely condemned it. 13.9% rather condemned it, as opposed to 7.8% who approved of it, and 7.4% who rather approved of it. 54.5% completely condemned it in Eastern Ukraine, on top of 13.9% that still rather condemned it. There is a 13.1% that's in the middle. They didn't want Russian troops there. 2015, we see that things are beginning to change. Dynamics of the positive attitude of Ukrainians toward Russia and of Russians toward Ukraine. Now, we looked earlier and we saw that the approval ratings of Ukrainians towards Russians was around 90% or higher. In 2015, it just absolutely collapses from a high of over 90% down to 30%. And as mentioned, at this time, this is when opinions begin to really shift. And in 2022, of course, we'll see opinions definitely shift. So 2017, if the referendum on whether Ukraine should join the customs union with Russia, Belarus, and Kazakhstan was to happen now, how would you vote? 55% against, only 15% for. In your opinion, what direction of foreign policy should the Ukraine take? 53% joining the European Union, 11% joining the customs union. And while the earlier graphic that we saw was not specific to the customs union, but instead in joining an alliance with Russia and Belarus, the customs union involves Russia and Belarus, essentially. So I think it's fair. I wanted to describe that for clarity, but I think it's fair to say that we can see the numbers drastically changing in that scenario. So these are broken down by region, because I'm sure that you're saying, well, yes, of course the West wants to, but what about the East? Well, there is a big difference. In the West, 73.9% were ready for the European Union, and 29.5% were in the East. But this is still a lot of ground. And when we look at the selections, 29.5% accession to the European Union, 26.7% accession to the customs union. So there's still a greater portion, albeit small, at this point, who wanted to join the European Union than the customs union. This is very different than the past. There's also a majority in the region too, 31.9%, that says, let's not do either, which is interesting. And I think points to the want of people in this region to have some independence from the central government of Ukraine while still being part of Ukraine. Table 9, this involves NATO. So for joining NATO, I want you to just remember this, because we're going to look at this in a few years too. In the East, 25% were for and 49% were against. That's pretty solid, right? So almost 50% were against joining, and then essentially the rest make up for, didn't participate, difficult to say. And that's different from the West. However, even the West, only 61.7% at this time were for joining, which is the largest out of this table, but not necessarily overwhelming, as I'm sure this upcoming Russian referendum will be. And this is when things really change. Up to this point, we've seen some discrepancies in the propaganda. We've seen that ethnic Russians, Russian language speakers, well, there were policies we didn't discuss, such as what should you do with schooling and should there be an official second language. Outside of political policy, we see in terms of tolerance versus prejudice or bigotry that ethnic Russians who speak Russian were number three most tolerated, including Ukrainians who speak Ukrainian. We saw that people in Donbass did not want separation, or at least the majority didn't, that most wanted to come to some type of agreement with Ukraine to remain in Ukraine, but perhaps with different structural changes to how governance occurred, whether that be autonomy within Ukraine, whether that be decentralization or federalization. We talked about the complications of that and how that conversation never happened because Russia swooped into Crimea and had non-regular soldiers, extremists, et cetera, in Donbass, escalating so quickly that the Petro Poroshenko regime really never had an opportunity to fail and not get that done. It's, you can't even criticize them because it there was no time to really do so. And we see that the vast majority of people in Eastern Ukraine didn't want Russian troops there. They did not want to become an independent sovereign country. The majority didn't want to join Russia. So all of these things are contradicting the narratives. And I'll leave it up to you to decipher why, or you can watch some of my other videos that explain why. However, moving forward, after the full-scale Russian invasion in 2022, we will see numbers drastically, drastically change. And again, as I am speaking, this is what's trending on Twitter. What's happening? War in Ukraine live. Putin orders partial mobilization as Russia moves to hold annexation referendum. The more Russia escalates, the further opinions shift away from them. And we'll see that in the data here. It's something that we all need to remember for when we see what will be an inevitable outcome of these referendums showing a vast support for joining Russia. Again, as I speak, this is what's trending on Twitter right now. War in Ukraine, Putin orders partial mobilization as Russia moves to hold annexation referendum. The observation is the more Russia escalates, the further opinions shift. And the way that they're shifting is away from them. Keep that in mind when the inevitable results come back, and they haven't come back yet, but we all know that they're going to be overwhelmingly to join Russia. Now, these are from 2022. Voting in the referendum on joining NATO in regional dimensions. Do you want to join NATO? In the East, it went from 92% no in 2009 to 56% yes in 2022, with 11% saying no and the rest being I don't know or did not answer. From 92% no to 56% yes. And that's true for every region, including the West. If you look back to 2009, there was no area that had a clear majority. The West was 34 to 40, 34 against 44. So there was a large number of did not answer, not sure. But even in the West, which is supposed to be this stronghold of pro-Western, NATO, et cetera, in 2009, only 40% polled were for joining, and in 2022, 81% were. But I think more specific to this discussion, the East, that change is drastic. Again, 2022, all these are from, unless otherwise mentioned, this year. Voting in the referendum on joining the EU in the regional dimension, so now this is the European Union. In the East, in 2013, 46% were against. In 2022, only 5% are now against joining the European Union. In 2013, only 23% were for. Now 71% are for. Isn't that something? And you know, it's not just this region either. As a matter of fact, just for a moment, I'm going to jump out of these charts and look at some other regional events, and then we'll jump back in. Here's a website I grabbed for no particular reason, EVA. Russia's invasion of Ukraine shifted the opinion of a majority of Finns in favor of NATO membership. 60% of Finns support Finland's NATO membership and 19% oppose it. The proportion of those in favor of membership has increased by 34% from last autumn. And if we look at this image, we can see beginning in 1998, the fully agree, which is red, and mostly agree are below or equal to 25%. In 2022, well over the majority, well over the majority. It's as if the numbers had flip-flopped from top to bottom. Similar results with Sweden. Beginning in 2014, we see that there's 28% yes to join NATO and the 56% no. When we go to July of 2022, there is a 64% yes and a 21% no. Even more, it's a flip-flop, but even greater support in 2022. And this is what we see in Ukraine as well, including Eastern Ukraine. And then the question might be, as it is, what about the ethnic Russians, the people that are the most persecuted, supposedly, in Ukraine? Graph three, this is 2022, of course. Voting and referendum on joining the EU and NATO among linguistic and ethnic categories of the population. For Russian-speaking Russians in Ukraine, 53% are for joining the EU, 25% against, or excuse me, 16% against. 51% of Russians speaking Russian within Ukraine, 51% are for joining NATO, 27% against. And Russian-speaking Ukrainians, the numbers are even greater, 76% for joining the EU, 5% for not, 59% for joining NATO, 12% not. But even among the specific target audience, the population of people who are ethnically Russian, who speak the Russian language in Ukraine, the clear majority now support EU and NATO ascension. What Russia is doing is not working. On what Russia is doing, perceptions of various aspects of the Russian-Ukrainian war. Assertion one, there are no problems with the use of the Russian language in Ukraine, and Russian-speaking citizens are not oppressed and persecuted. 93% of participants agreed with that statement. 5% agreed with the assertion that in Ukraine, Russian-speaking citizens are persecuted. Ukraine has its own long history of formation and statehood. It's a country. 97% polled said yes. 2% said Ukraine is an artificial state created by a Soviet government in the 20th century. That's what people like Steve Bannon say. Alexander Dugin, if you want to go down that road. The vast majority of Donbass residents want to remain as part of Ukraine. 73% said yes. 17% said the vast majority of Donbass residents really sincerely want independence or joining Russia. So that 17% includes both of those options of independence or joining Russia. Western states did not want a war with Russia and did not try to provoke Ukraine to attack Russia. 85% said yes. 9% said Western states have deliberately pumped Ukraine with weapons and tried to drag Ukraine into the war against Russia. We have to ask ourselves why Glenn Greenwald, why Jackson Hinkle, why Gray Zone, Blumenthal, why all these people who say that they're trying to stand up and give voice to the oppressed people, why what they're saying is not matching what the people in that country's voice is actually saying. The permeation of the Ukrainian government with the Nazi worldview is fiction. 89% said yes. Only 8% said the Ukrainian government is imbued with a Nazi worldview. So we get the idea. I think maybe let's read the last one. The Russian army is primarily to blame for destruction of civilian infrastructure and casualties among the civilian population. 96% yes. 2% blame this on the Ukrainian military. So you get the idea. This is a poll of Ukrainians. And everything on the left column is what Ukrainians are saying. Conversely, assertion number two column is everything that Max Blumenthal, Gray Zone, all these media people are saying. And so you have to ask yourself, why are they not speaking in line with the people of this country if they are anti-imperialist? And early, I showed those approval ratings of Russia with Ukraine, how Ukrainians perceived Russians. It was very favorably, over 90%. And then I showed kind of in the middle where we saw things begin to dip. And now look at this. And this is of May 2022. It went from under 10% to 92% disapproval of Russia in Ukraine. It's amazing what happens when your country gets invaded, isn't it? But there are still people tweeting that Russia was invited, that they were met with champagne and fireworks. No, they weren't. The people of Ukraine are telling you, no, they weren't. And so what's the motivation for saying otherwise? Again, maybe it's a regional thing. Well, let's look at the regional breakdown. Until February of 24th, 2022, lived in the region. Attitudes toward Russia in regional dimensions. In the East, only 4% well, 85% bad. It doesn't match the podcast and those monetized YouTube channels, and you have to ask yourself why. Index of perception of the Russian-Ukrainian war in the East, forget the West and everything else, in the East, 80% take a pro-Ukrainian position, 13% a mostly pro-Ukrainian position, 3% Russian, 1% actually pro-Russian. And I guarantee you that by the time you get this video, the referendum would have happened or is going to happen shortly, and that the referendum is going to show the opposite of this, that it's going to be something like 80% greatly wanted to join Russia, 13% mostly wanted to join Russia, 1% did not want to join Russia. And you have to ask yourself, why aren't the numbers matching up? You also might say, well, okay, this is Eastern Ukraine, but Eastern Ukraine is a large region. What about the people in Donetsk and Luhansk specifically? Okay, well, this shows that. Graph 2, index of perception of the Russian-Ukrainian war depending on where the respondent currently lives. So let's look at now lives in the occupied territory. 68% pro-Ukrainian. 13% mostly pro-Ukrainian, 11% interim, they don't know, 9% mostly, and I don't see pro. I don't see a pro-Russia stance in there. Statistically insignificant for the people living in occupied territory. Let that sink in and compare this to whatever the results, well, we know what they're going to be, but whatever the results are of that referendum. And again, ask yourself, where is the difference? Is it in the sociological institute? Because I could see all those people we mentioned before saying, well, this is affiliated with some think tank donation, and that think tank is part of some George Soros network that funds color revolutions for the military industrial complex. It could be all that. Or it could be because people are under threat and occupation and war, and that Poles have soldiers around, they're armed, and that they want stability, or they're scared. Speaking of being scared, Table 1 shows data on the emotional background in the regional dimension. Although the situation is generally similar, there is a tendency from west to east of anxiety, fear, horror, as well as shock. Emotional background in the regional dimension. In the East, the highest involve anger, feelings of anger, indignation, hatred, distrust, pride for the Ukrainian army. Isn't that interesting? 45% in the East had pride for the Ukrainian army. Surprising. 26% shock, 41% anxiety, fear, etc. Table 2 shows the data depending on where the respondent currently lives. It's important to see that even among those living under occupation, 41% are proud of Ukraine slash the army. Pride for Ukraine, comma, the army. They now live in occupied territories, 41%. It's amazing. I mean, not amazing that they have pride for it. I mean, they can feel whatever they want. It's amazing how that number is so different from what is shown to a Western audience from so-called alternative media outlets. And of course, what's going to be shown with the results of this, you know, referendum in air quotes. And so these will be the things that you see. These are just some things I grabbed today. I didn't want to call people out by including their handle because they aren't necessarily media personalities. They were just things that I grabbed for this video. Yes, asking for peace through negotiation is in 2020, akin to being a racist in liberal circles. I really hope we come to our senses here. Liberals won't be content until NATO forces are 5 miles from Moscow after having partially evaded all of the tactical nukes that's been shot at them on the way. Peace is not the goal. Money laundering for global elites is. For sociopaths and the heedless who make money from death and destruction, demanding peace means shutting down the lucrative business, and they definitely don't want to go out of business. No way the U.S. would ever allow a peace deal in Ukraine. The GWT is winding down, and American defense contractors need this war. The U.S. Nazi regime has made it clear it wants to destroy Russia. Why are you hanging on this point as if it informs anyone anything new? These are comments supposedly from the Western left, I guess, who would say that they're for peace and against imperialism, for the rights and determination of indigenous peoples around the world to have their own direction, free from empire, imperialism, any outside source. 2022. Graph 1. The issue of possible ways to ensure Ukraine's security is currently being discussed. Which of these statements do you agree with to the greatest extent? 42% saying it's quite acceptable if instead of joining NATO, which may be blocked by some NATO members, Ukraine will have security agreements with countries such as the United States, Great Britain, Germany, and France. 39% say only joining NATO will ensure Ukraine's security. Only 4% say they don't agree with either. 39% say you have to join NATO. 42% say in lieu of joining NATO, we need to have some type of agreement with all of the Western powers, for whom supposedly Western leftists would say are those Nazi money laundering, etc. Those are the people that people in Ukraine want to ensure their security. Security issues depending on where the respondent currently lives. So now living in occupied territories, 39% say only joining NATO will be able to ensure Ukraine's security. 37% saying that in lieu of NATO, joining into an alliance with the United States, Great Britain, Germany, France is acceptable. Only 5% do not agree with any of this. Looking at the middle column, after February 24th, left from an occupied territory to a territory controlled by Ukraine authorities, even greater numbers, 43% saying that they would support in lieu of NATO, joining into an alliance directly with the United States, Great Britain, Western powers. 33%, however, saying that only joining NATO would be acceptable, with 3% less than those currently living in the occupied territories saying that they don't agree with any of these suggestions. Again, same year, readiness to make territorial concessions. An editorial was recently published by the New York Times in which particular one could see a call for territorial concessions on part of Ukraine. A few months before the full-scale invasion, KIIS staff had a number of conversations with representatives of Western media, and we can note that there was often a deep misunderstanding of the realities of Ukraine and Ukrainians, despite a number of reliable polls, which continued in the form of Kiev will fall in 3 days, and other similar expert considerations by Western specialists, in quotes. In recent poll, we generally asked about the readiness of territorial concessions to achieve peace. As can be seen, 82% of respondents said that no territorial concession should be allowed. Only 10% believe that some territorial concessions can be used to achieve peace and preserve independence. And we see this below with an 8% saying difficult to say, but an overwhelming number saying that giving Russia more land is not going to stop their territorial expansion in the future or provide peace for Ukraine. So that we're not just giving voice to Western Ukraine, let's look at all the territory, specifically in the East. An overwhelming 68% say that under no circumstance should Ukraine relinquish any of its territories, even if this prolongs the war and threatens to preserve its independence. Overwhelming in the East of Ukraine. And of course, in these other regions, the numbers are much higher. But again, a discrepancy even in Western media that is not this alt-imperialist or RT-style media, even in just traditional New York Times-style articles, there is a clear discrepancy about what Ukrainians, the people who should be at the center of this conversation, actually want. On this image, it is also important to see that among the respondents currently living in the occupied territories, 77% are against any territorial concessions. 18% are ready to make concessions. At the same time, among those who left the occupied territories after February 24, 2022, full-scale invasion, 82% oppose any concessions. Only 5% support concessions. This is a very important statistic because these are not only the people involved, Ukrainians, these are the Ukrainians who are or were directly involved in the actual military field, in the areas that were under occupation, in the areas in which military action was happening. And in those areas, for the people who left the occupied areas, 82% oppose concessions. For those who still live in those occupied areas, 77%. And again, think of this when we get news of this referendum. And if the referendum were held on the question of whether Ukraine should join NATO, whatever your choice would be, vote for joining this union, against joining, or abstain, do not participate in voting, In the East for joining, 56%. Against joining, 11%. This is from February 24th, 2022. Graph two, readiness for territorial concessions in the regional dimension. So to take the East into consideration, 68% of respondents in Eastern Ukraine say that under no circumstances should Ukraine relinquish any of its territories, even if this prolongs the war and threatens to preserve independence. 68% in the East say this. 19%, Ukraine can relinquish some of its territories in order to achieve peace, as opposed to 68%. And that, again, is in the East. In the East. It's also important to see that among the respondents currently living in the occupied territories, 77% are against any territorial concessions. 18% are ready to make these concessions. At the same time, among those who left the occupied territories after February 24, 2022, 82% oppose concessions. So even for the people who stayed in these occupied territories, this is supposed to be the heart of this, right? Even for the people who are currently in those territories, 77% polled say under no circumstances should Ukraine relinquish any of its territories, even if this prolongs the war. And you'll hear that from some of these alt-imperialist types that you're a warmonger, you're a neocon. No, you're a Ukrainian that lives in that territory who just happens to know what they want and the history of their region and interactions with Russia and this regime and any expectations of what that might be. And if referendum was held on the question of whether Ukraine should join NATO, now look at this, because this is probably the biggest shock outside of support for the Ukrainian military in the East. For joining, 56% in the East. Against joining, 11%. Would not participate, 22%. So the smallest number involved or tied for difficult, I guess, is against joining. And juxtapose that to where we started at. Juxtapose that to where back in 2008, 2010, even the majority in the West wasn't sure about joining NATO. Now, 2022, in the East, where this is supposed to be the home of Ukrainians who speak Russian, ethnic Russians who speak Russian in Ukraine, who are supposedly facing genocide, that 56% polled are for joining NATO now. Formulation of questions from the questionnaire. Imagine, please, that a referendum is currently taking place on whether to join the European Union. Look at the East. 71% are now for joining the European Union. 5% are against. That is astounding from the original numbers that we were looking at, in which the customs union won out, in which an alliance with Belarus and Russia won out, and specifically it won out in this region of the country, Donbass, the area of Donetsk and Luhansk, eastern Ukraine. 71% now support. Voting in the referendum on joining NATO in regional dimensions. This is nice because it gives you a visual for what I just stated. So look at the East. In 2009, 92% were against joining NATO. In 2022, 56% are for joining NATO. That change is drastic. It's amazing. Voting in referendum on joining the EU. Look at the East on the right side. 2013, 46% against, 23% for. In 2022, 5% against, 71% for. Who do you consider yourself to be, first of all? A resident of your village, a resident of your region, a citizen of Ukraine, a representative of your own ethnic group, nation, a citizen, a former citizen of the Soviet Union, a citizen of Europe, a citizen of the world. 80% in the East, a citizen of Ukraine. Next to that, a resident of your village, and pretty close, the highest, a citizen of the world, which is interesting. It speaks to the Donbass and its unique culture. But even in West, even in the West, a citizen of Ukraine ranks 85.6. In the East, it's 5 points lower. A citizen of Ukraine. Again, who do you consider yourself to be, first of all, but this time distributed by linguistic and ethnic groups? So not just a region. A citizen of Ukraine, Ukrainian speaking Ukrainians, 86%. So that's pretty much what we saw with the West, right? Russian speaking Russians in Ukraine, 77.7% consider themselves citizens of Ukraine. Again, interesting, they had just by 1%, or by 0.1, but they also had the highest for a citizen of the world, 10.7%. a citizen of the former Soviet Union. You'll see rhetoric coming from the left, socialist facing groups or groups with the names that contain workers, workers' world, socialists, etc., that will try to combine these separatist groups in Donetsk and Luhansk with the former Soviet Union or communism or socialism. That's not how Russians who speak Russian in the region, that's not how they at least self-identify. And so again, what does all this mean? Well, hopefully, because it did for me, hopefully it gives you insight into what actual Ukrainians think. Hopefully it gives you some insight into what specifically Ukrainians that live in Eastern Ukraine think, and specifically further, more granular, what Ukrainians living in occupied territories or Ukrainians that had recently, up until generally seemed like February of 2022, had lived in occupied territories think. And interestingly enough, from what I found, I can't tell you what to think, but what I found in this data does not represent what I see all over social media. And these are just some screen grabs from today, September 21st. On the top, Vladimir Putin promised to provide safe conditions for holding referendums in the LPR, the DPR. Russia will support the decisions made by the residents of the regions. We just went through what the residents in those regions want. And it's not this. However, we all know the results of this referendum are not going to match the data that we just saw. And so then we need to make a decision. Why? Over on the right, we have Aaron here. Looks to me like the Ukraine proxy war is entering an even more dangerous phase. It could have been avoided. Well, and what is this in reference to? Of course, this is claiming that the United States via NATO and Nazi ultranationalists in power of Ukraine. I've even seen some really far out there things we won't get into, but that is from that section is where the aggression is coming from. Well, could it have been avoided? When we looked at the information, even ethnic Russians speaking Russian in Eastern Ukraine, even they overwhelmingly say territorial concession is not an answer for peace. So it seems like if you look at the data in which most of the people in Donbass did not want to become independent, in which most of the people in Donbass did not want to join Russia, in which most of the people in Donbass did not want Russian troops in Ukraine, it seems like, and this is an opinion, it could have been avoided if Russia did not militarily intervene in the first place. And that is Russia who continues to escalate. And that if Russia had not annexed Crimea with its referendum, different topic, that perhaps the Poroshenko regime could have actually had a discussion to avoid what we have today. And the tricky part now is, what is a solution going to look like moving forward? Going down to the bottom, yesterday we have Max Blumenthal here. Dust comes from part of the left that spends much of their adult life in an arms industry-backed corporate Democrat think tank soaking up liberal imperialist culture before infiltrating a Social Democrats Capitol Hill office. And that's in response to Dust saying they're encouraged about reports of the Ukrainian military progress. Well, everything that Max just said is completely contrary to what the people of Ukraine said in almost 20 years of polling, including Ukrainians living in Eastern Ukraine. So again, we have to ask ourselves why, because Max is not representing Ukrainians. Max is instead ignoring Ukrainians in order to create a narrative about the Democratic Party in the United States. And this is something that these people do in general. This is not about the Democratic Party. This is not about the United States. This is not about the West. This is not about an ideology. It's political, social, economic. This is not about geopolitics. This is about what people in Ukraine want. Because this is happening in Ukraine, it's impacting Ukraine, and it should be the voices of Ukrainians who guide and lead this discussion. And if you look at the reality of these, and Jackson's is especially insulting. But when we look at the realities, the totality of this and all the other things that we see, what you see is this, that the voices of people in Ukraine who are actually telling you what they want are excluded. And instead, the people of Ukraine are dehumanized, turned into objects, repackaged into some conspiracy, ideology, something abstract, so you take their humanity away, and then sold through their monetized channels and websites and YouTube channels, etc., as if this is like being alternative or being a leftist, when in reality, what they're doing is ignoring the people directly involved, the Ukrainian people, in exchange for, well, I mean, you know, I have other videos that talk about where this information comes from. So check out the channel, watch those. Juxtapose what is in this to what happens with the referendum. Because again, this is being recorded 3:14 in the afternoon, September 21st.